Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason. This is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. The Year in Review series continues with a stop in April. Returning guest, a little bit earlier than usual. We'll explain why. Rich Kraich of Voices of Wrestling. I'll spoil it. He's a new dad, but I was able to secure him for a little over an hour. Talk all about the month of April. Of course, WrestleMania. The build to WrestleMania, we talk about that. Of course, AEW Dynasty that month. We had some departures, some people taking some time off. That still continues as we sit here in almost late November. Of course, the best of TNA, NXT, Japan, the junk drawer, all kinds of other stuff as well. A lot of WWE on this course. The buying of AAA, The Rock, and why he didn't appear at WrestleMania. Yeah, tons and tons of stuff here. A lot of things you remember, but a lot of things that you forgot about. It's all here in the latest edition of the Pro Wrestling Year in Review series for 2025. Josh Nason, Rich Kraich going for just over an hour, right about now. Well, a very special edition of the show today because I think for the first time, I have a brand new dad on the line. Rich Kraich, a Voice of Wrestling, returns for his annual visit, usually in September. But he has a very busy last couple months of the year. And so I made a note that I'm going to contact Rich early. And the day I contacted him was, Rich, it was about 15 minutes after I sent you that email asking when might work, I saw an email from or a post from Joe in your Patreon saying, he's not going to be able for the flagship today because he's a new dad. And I was just like, of course, like right after I sent the email, I felt so bad. Yep. But we're glad to have you here and congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, no, you said I have a very busy last few months of the year. Well, now I have a very busy life. So this works. Yeah, we're doing this at a very different time than when we would usually record and a different month than we usually do. But happy to come back again and do this year in review or the month in review. But life is definitely altered and definitely changed. But it's been great. Everything's been great so far. So
That's great. Question, check Rich out at Voice of Wrestling. When do you think you're going to return to the show?
So my plan is to be there this week. So when's this particular episode?
Thursday, okay. The 20th. Yeah.
All right. So about in your free podcast feeds every Friday morning, the flagship will be there. I don't know exactly when we're going to go live, and my plan is to return this week to the flagship. So that should be available for you. Just look us up on any podcast app, whatever you use, Spotify, Overcast, Downcast, Apple Podcasts, whatever you use, the Flagship Wrestling Podcast. I'll be there Friday morning for you and on any free podcast feed, or you can listen live. Flagshippatreon.com. We do a live show on that as well. So it's been fun to have a week off, I guess. I've been watching a lot of wrestling. I will say that is one thing. I have watched a lot more sports and wrestling than I ever have before, because especially weird West Coast sports. I was watching the weirdest college football on Saturday night, and I'm locked in on the Denver Nuggets and the Portland Trailblazers this year because I'm up late. Normally, yep. I'm in bed by 9, and I'm yawning at the idea of a West Coast basketball game or whatever, but not anymore. I'm like, all right, here we go. I get mad that they end. I'm like, oh, now what am I supposed to watch? It's 12:30 a.m. What am I supposed to watch now? But
I remember being up watching Westworld with my daughter 3:30 in the morning, having her feeding, and I'd watch random TV shows at the middle, 3 in the morning or something. Yeah, 3:30. I distinctly remember that. And I'm like, she okay with this? I'm like, I had to talk to myself. I'm like, she's 3 weeks old. I think she's not going to remember anything of what you're watching on TV right now. So don't worry about
it. Yeah. I think it's very fitting. I don't know if this is YouTube just getting a little fun with it, but somebody mentioned this to me, and then it happened a couple days later, and they were a new father as well. A couple days later, I was scrolling on my YouTube, and the algorithm gave me old episodes of Dave Attell's Insomniac. I don't know if you remember that Comedy Central show, Insomniac.
Yes, yes.
And I was like, I mean, it's kind of fitting they sent me this at 1:30 a.m. while I'm just and I'm like, I'm gonna watch Insomniac. So that's kind of what I've been watching the last couple of days. It feels very fitting that that show embraces my new lifestyle. So
that was a great show. I remember that.
It's really good. It's Some of the jokes are, you know, very of their time. You know what I mean? A lot of stuff you might not be able to do in 2025, but it's still a very good show. I find myself laughing a lot still at it. So
that's awesome. Great. Well, let's talk about some wrestling. Put you to the test. Put the gray matter to the test as we talk about the month of April. For those listeners who may be new to the series, I've been doing it for, I think, about 5 years or so. And I go month by month, 12 episodes with a different guest talking about the year in pro wrestling. Every episode is a different month, of course. And now we focus on April. I go through hundreds and hundreds of headlines and stories that we did on the Wrestling Observer website. And I pull out the most newsworthy and the most notable for each of the major promotions. And then I kick it over for thoughts and all that stuff. So pretty straightforward. But here's how we're going to do it this time, Rich. So we're going to do WrestleMania. However, there were so many different headlines leading into WrestleMania. We'll start there, the build to WrestleMania, then we'll get to WrestleMania 41 itself. So I'll go through these headlines, and I'll kick it over to you for thoughts. So we learned that CM Punk, the favor that Paul Heyman owed him, we learned on SmackDown, was to be in his corner for WrestleMania as he was set to main event night one against Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins. WWE partnered with Drumstick for WrestleMania and SummerSlam shows. The Drumstick ad, of course, ran right before the main event of WrestleMania. Cena was heel, and of course you had babyface John Cena smiling. Jesse is supposed to be playing a heel, which completely took me out of it. Miro was announced from WrestleMania Week indie shows ahead of his expected return to the company. He was spotted at WWE headquarters, and then Big E confirmed Rusev is returning, and then what did he do? He made his WWE return at the Raw after WrestleMania, and we also learned that Lana signed a Legends deal as part of that package as well. Kevin Owens announced that, a little bit of a surprise, he was getting neck surgery out of his WrestleMania match against Randy Orton. He said it happened in a regular match, no hardcore things. The company and Peacock announced a WrestleMania 9 Becoming a Spectacle documentary that aired on that service. If you remember, there's this angle between Tiffany Stratton and Charlotte, this in-ring promo that went awry rather quickly. And Tiffany Stratton said afterwards, it was talk of the wrestling world that Saturday morning, Friday night and Saturday morning. And Tiffany Stratton said that Charlotte Flair, quote unquote, did not expect me to stand up to her. Ric Flair chimed in, said he didn't like it, said some of the topics talked about were very sensitive. And yeah, it was quite a thing leading into their match at WrestleMania. WWE and Topps announced they were doing a match worn patch program, very similar to what they do with some of their baseball cards and other sports cards as well. The company, of course, ranked the 50 greatest matches in WrestleMania history, which most people online did not agree with most of them, or at least the order. Lex Luger said he hadn't heard back about Sting inducting him into the WWE Hall of Fame. Tony Khan said, Sting and I haven't spoken about doing a Hall of Fame induction, so the will he, won't he. And that whole drama played out in April. We learned the legacy inductees in the Hall of Fame, Kamala, Dory Funk Sr., and Ivan Koloff. CM Punk in an interview said he'd book the Women's World title match to main event WrestleMania 41. Corporate Phil, always doing what's best. Triple H said WWE is up for the challenge of an international WrestleMania. Months later, we learned that they certainly are going to be up for the challenge. Uh-huh. We'll see. Yep. In 2027. Carmella Hayes won the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal the night before in SmackDown. Rey Fénix made his debut during the month, and I put that in this section because, lo and behold, he got to have his WrestleMania debut rather quickly, replacing Rey Mysterio, because Rey Mysterio tore his abductor muscle on SmackDown before WrestleMania, so he was out of that match. And Triple H thanked Vince McMahon, among many others, in his Hall of Fame speech the night before WrestleMania. Thoughts about any of that before we get into the granddaddy of them all?
Yeah, so one of the things I wanted to talk about was, and I kind of forgot that this happened in April, and you reminded me, one of my favorite things to happen in WWE this entire year was that Charlotte Tiffany segment, which, yeah, it went off the rails and got, you know, very sensitive according to Ric Flair, but I kind of liked it because it's so rare that you don't get, like, in today's WWE, everything is very regimented and very scripted out, and, you know, that's been true for a while, but you can't always tell the, like, in this has been going on for 20, 30 years or whatever, you know, heavy scripts, heavy writers or whatever, but sometimes there's guys that in the company that you can't tell them what to do. They're just going to go out there and they're going to do their thing. Ric Flair being one of them. You can write Ric Flair a script, but he's just probably just going to go out there and cut his promo. But now everybody that's kind of come up in the system and all the, you know, pretty much the entire roster of WWE these days have come up in an idea of, okay, a writer gives me my script and I have to stay on segment and everything's got to be exactly as we talked about. And I have to hit the time cues exactly how I hit them and do all this sort of stuff. And in that segment, just like it felt very real and very organic and very natural and was uncomfortable, but that's okay for me. To me, it was like a breath of fresh air in modern pro wrestling, how just real and how organic it all felt as these two are kind of throwing jabs back and forth. And Charlotte kind of steps up to Tiffany and Tiffany steps up back to Charlotte. And it's like that sort of old school wrestling stuff that we saw here. And I would never have expected, you know, Charlotte Flair and Tiffany Stratton to be the ones that have like the most real promo segment we've had in years. I mean, it reminded me of when CM Punk first came to AEW, and a lot of guys would sort of do that. Punk would have his little promo and those guys would sort of step up to him. Like Eddie Kingston was a classic one as well, where those two dudes were just out there. Just like, you could tell that maybe they had a modicum of an idea of what the promo was supposed to be, but then pretty quickly it just got thrown up and it was like, all right, let's just throw jabs back at one another. And it's good. And that's fun. And that's wrestling at its core. So I remember how much I really enjoyed this segment, as a lot of people were saying, oh, that was uncomfortable. Or, oh, I was like, this is it. That's the essence of wrestling right there. Especially Tiffany proving something to, I think, everybody, and probably proving something to the office too, where Charlotte, you know, she's been the star of this, you know, women's division for 10 years or whatever. She tries to kind of big time Tiffany. Tiffany steps right back up to her. And I thought that was really cool and really interesting. So, yeah, it didn't go the way that everybody wanted it to, but I thought it was a pretty great segment because it felt, you know, kind of pro wrestling in a company that is increasingly sports entertainment, you know, every year that passes.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. You know, people that feel uncomfortable, like, this is the way it's supposed to be, you know, like this is. Not everything is meant to be sugar-coated, and the reality of it is what draws people in. Think of all the things that, you know, we talk about over the course of a year, and the promos that stand out, like really stand out. You probably count them on one hand. I mean, this was one of them. This was a segment that I'm sure WWE didn't love, but it got a ton of attention. It was a talk of the industry for a couple days, and it adds some intrigue into the match. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That became like one of my most anticipated matches of WrestleMania, because I was like, oh, man, are they going to stiff each other?
I know, right? Yeah.
And then they kind of did. You know, I mean, they had a pretty, you know, rough match, and they both left looking like they were in a war. And I was like, that's it, man. That's the essence. So, yeah, what you're really supposed to do is a promo is supposed to get you more excited about the match. I know, hot take. It's crazy to think about, but it did. And that's right there. Like, you are now – this was a match that everybody was just kind of like, ah, whatever, you know, it was kind of an afterthought in the build of WrestleMania. And this one promo, it has, as uncomfortable as it was, made it feel like, oh, wow, these two combatants are going to go at it at WrestleMania and they don't like each other. I can't wait to see what happens. I mean, what's more pro wrestling than that?
Exactly. Let's get into WrestleMania 41 itself, of course, from Las Vegas, Nevada. Before this, night one, before the first night even kicked off, is still daylight. Company announced they were buying AAA, going into a deal with whatever the name of the company is down there, but essentially controlling interest 51%, the other Philippe 49%.
Yes, on yes, the other right. end. Yeah, I was looking it up feverishly as well. I was like, God, I remember this off the top of my head, but exactly. I couldn't remember it.
That's right. And the company issued AAA issued a statement after the acquisition, or the intended acquisition, which would happen, I believe, in August was when it was finally done. Them saying the best is yet to come. Conan, not bitter at all, always willing to keep those knives sharp. Said after the purchase, with money, you'll see what we can do. And remember, he had kind of been making some comments leading up to this. Not a fan of how things went with AEW and Tony Khan near their end in 2024. So yeah, this was he was gleeful at these proceedings. And then we just learned at that same point, Worlds Collide was going to be coming up with a show featuring AAA talent, main roster talent, and NXT talent as well. Jey Uso tapped out Gunther to win the WWE World Heavyweight title. The New Day won the World Tag Team titles. Jacob Fatu won the United States title. El Hijo del Vikingo, speaking of AAA, got involved on the show as well. Tiffany Stratton retained over Charlotte Flair. We talked about that. Seth Rollins won Mania Night 1 over CM Punk and Roman Reigns. The big swerve there, aligning with Paul Heyman. WWE announced the Slammy Award winners. Io Sky retained the Women's World title. On Night 2, Dominic Mysterio won the Intercontinental title. TNA champion Joe Hendry answered Randy Orton's WrestleMania Open Challenge. And it wasn't like a very long match. I had a lot of people talk and say it was a squash, and he had to come out and say it wasn't and all that stuff. But Joe Hendry getting his Royal Rumble debut and his WrestleMania debut, and he wasn't officially with the company, and now he is. So we'll see when he returns to those big shows. Becky Lynch, speaking of returns, made her return finally at this show. Stone Cold Steve Austin made an appearance. He did not wrestle, but he certainly crashed his ATV and did that right into the barricade at WrestleMania. John Cena, to wrap up the week, weekend, won his 17th world title. No big surprise here, defeating Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania. However, while this match did not have The Rock, and a lot of people thought The Rock was going to be there. We'll get to that in 1 minute, some of the quotes he had afterward to Pat McAfee. But John Cena, the quote-unquote heel, winning his 17th world title and defeating Cody Rhodes to end his one-year title streak. Afterward, no big surprise, the company touted Mania as the most financially successful event in company history. It's pretty good when you do that because the ticket prices are so high. The company, part of that, also they got approved for $4.2 million in tax credits for the whole week. And Charlotte Flair, after the roast of WrestleMania, which, of course, really capped off the weekend, some audio got out, no real video got out because they didn't allow phones in or something, or what have you. But she, there was a lot of comments about her marriage and all that stuff. She said on Twitter, IDK, I'm just going to wrestle. So a lot, it began her babyface turn. One I don't think was planned, but just started happening because I think people started to feel bad for her. Seemed to begin at WrestleMania 41 week. Thoughts about any of that?
Yes, it was a busy week. You mentioned those ticket prices, and I was in Vegas for WrestleMania weekend. I was mostly going to go to the indie shows and some of the other stuff. And before I booked my ticket back, my flight back, I said, yeah, I should just look. And I've never been to an actual WrestleMania. I've never been to a big-time stadium show. So I was like, maybe I should just go to a WrestleMania. So this is like, 4 or 5 weeks before. And I go and I'm like, I'll just buy the worst ticket in the building. I don't care. I just want to be there. And the worst ticket in the building was like, it was like $440 or whatever. And I was like, Jesus. Oh, this flight is booked. All right. So I just came back on Saturday just so I could watch Mania at home. I couldn't believe it, man. It was wild. The ticket prices they were charging for Mania. And hey, if you can, people will buy them, then go for it. I mean, yeah, to keep charging that until people stop buying it, I guess is the way to go. So, yeah, I'll definitely remember that, though, where I was like, you know what? I'll bite the bullet. Because in my mind, I was like, if it's like $200, whatever. And it was like $440. And I was like, that's a little too much for me. So that's all right. I'd be more than the flight. I mean, like I couldn't justify switching the flight to do it. So anyway, WrestleMania, it was an interesting two-night WrestleMania. I would say this year's WrestleMania felt like a show where they really stretched it out. Like, it could have very easily been one night and probably been a very good show if it was all one night. But it definitely felt like they stretched not that much into the two nights, and there was a lot of downtime. And that's not really unusual for a Paul Levesque booked WWE pay-per-view. There's always a lot of downtime and a lot of in-between. And, it's big time on, a lot of time spent on entrances and a lot of time spent on the pop and circumstance or whatever, and very little in the ring. And that's fine. We're used to that. But there was, when the first two-night WrestleMania started happening, it was like, they ended up being pretty good shows because it was like, all right, these people have a little bit more time to go out there and wrestle and really work their asses off for a while. And I thought this one in particular, just there was some good moments on both nights of Mania, but it felt like a very long, very stretched out show in a lot of ways. But night one, I did prefer a little bit more because I thought the Stratton Charlotte Flair match was pretty good. And I thought the Mania night one main event with the Paul Heyman turn, which I think a lot of people saw coming, but I thought was done in a pretty good way where Seth turned, gets Paul Heyman on his side and Paul turns on both Roman and Punk, which was, an interesting moment. And I don't know. It did kind of make Punk look like an idiot because it's like, come on, this guy wasn't clearly going to turn on you, right? Like, everybody saw it from a mile away. But anyway, it was, night one was okay. And then night two for me was, the big story coming out of it was John Cena's title win and defeating Cody Rhodes and no Rock being there. And that was, I think, a big kind of eye opener to me because it was, I think a lot of the Paul Levesque booked WWE era, I haven't loved all of it. But at least most of it felt like it was very regimented, very structured, very A to B to C storytelling. Like, everything felt like it all made sense. Like, did I love it all? No. But it all kind of made sense in all sort of words, all through the Bloodline stuff, all through, a lot of the good booking decisions that happened over the last couple of years was all like, yeah, all right. It all worked out very well, very well scheduled, very, it all kind of fit the story. And it felt like this John Cena Cody thing starting back in, what was it, Backlash or whatever, was it March or February or whatever. It felt like that entire story, nobody quite could figure out what's going on, why it's happening, what the story is. And then Mania came and everybody expects, well, The Rock has to be involved in some way, right? The Rock has to be there. He's got to be there. He's got to be there. And then when he wasn't there, and it just didn't, it felt like, I don't know, it just kind of felt like we all sort of knew where the story was going, and then they didn't do what that story was. And John Cena still wins the title. He still defeats Cody Rhodes, but The Rock's not involved. And it just kind of, it felt very, for the first time ever, it felt like a real miss from a Paul Levesque booked, major story. And It was weird. It was a weird match. It was a clunky match. Cena wasn't very good at working heel. I think we can now kind of all, you know, go back and look at that and see, because he's been a lot better ever since he's turned babyface, and we've seen him over the last couple months. This is what John Cena is comfortable doing. He wasn't comfortable working heel. And I thought it was really obvious in this match that he didn't know what to do. He hadn't been a heel in very long. He'd been working, you know, getting booed while working as a babyface for a while, but never working as like a true heel. And to him, he thought, you know, hey, I'm working as a heel. I got to be very slow and very methodical. And it ended up, the result was a not very good match with Cody Rhodes that also didn't feature The Rock. So it didn't feel like it landed quite in the right way. The match didn't quite work. And Cena won the world title, and it just kind of felt like Cody didn't feel very hot afterwards. And Cena, this heel turn didn't feel great. And the crowd is booing Cody and cheering Cena. There's not the right. It just felt like everything was kind of off the rails. You know what I mean? For the first time in the Paul Levesque booked era, it felt like you didn't have the connection. The fan connection wasn't quite there, and it was all kind of going in various different directions. So I don't know. What did you think after that match or after that main event?
Well, the big thing is, where's The Rock? And that is a good transition to his interview he did with Pat McAfee. I think the week after, or maybe 2 weeks after, I cannot remember. And it was, he said that he made the call to step back from the angle. He said that once the turn was made at Elimination Chamber in March, he said it was up to Rhodes and Cena to build and crush the story over the subsequent 6 weeks. And he thought it was a good idea for the final boss character to be involved. He said, I knew the best thing for the final boss, we established an idea with Cody's soul. Could always come back to it. I did feel and made the call that I want to be involved in that. Let the final boss step back in the shadows and let all the spotlight go to John. Let it go to Cody. Let's not make it about John's soul or Cody's soul. Let them do what they do. He said he loved the finish of the match, but he would have adjusted and finessed a few things about how they got there. He didn't say what it would be, but he did this interview. If people hadn't heard, it's worth going back to look and listen, but I don't believe him. I don't believe him one bit. It doesn't make any sense for him not to be involved. He was the catalyst of the thing.
Yes.
And they never have explained that element of why he did the throat slash, why Junter, because the assumption, and everyone has to kind of go with this, is John talked to The Rock and The Rock talked him into doing this. So the logical thing would be the next day or the next big event or something to explain why. Now, if they had done that in between and The Rock said, I'm going to go off in the, if he had said, but I'm going to go off in the shadows and John let you do your thing and be the best that you are, you got this. If there was some sort of interview segment, 15-minute promo or something like that, where if they explained it, that would have been better, which leads me to believe that it was, he had to get either talked into this, he got cold feet about this, or there was something there where he just is like, I don't want to do this. There was some sort of disconnect there between him and Levesque and leadership or something, because otherwise it doesn't make any sense. And if anyone says it does make sense, they're trying too hard to cape for WWE and Triple H and all this stuff. It's okay to say, this kind of sucked. And it doesn't make any sense. I think it's one of that's a big reason why the heel turn it didn't work, among several reasons, but because the kickoff to it, the lighting of the dynamite, you know, AEW reference, the lighting of the dynamite it fizzled out before it got the chance to really explode.
Yeah, if you remember, he cut that promo on, I forget, maybe SmackDown or whatever. I think it was SmackDown, a little bit after the turn, and didn't mention The Rock at all and just said, like, I'm in an abusive relationship. You people booed me and I gave you everything. And it was just like, well, that's not the story at all. The story that we just saw a little bit ago was that The Rock, turned you, to this side and gave you, the idea is that The Rock is going to help you win this title. You really want to win this 17th world title. And The Rock is the guy that says, hey, if you sell your soul to me, I can help you win that title. That's what the story was, I thought. And then the story just became like, I'm bad now because you guys were mean to me and booed me a lot. And then he just won the title from Cody without having, The Rock help. But Travis Scott came out and it was just like this. And you're right. I think there's no way to, you just have to be honest. You just have to be honest and say, this is, and for Paul Levesque, again, like I said, I haven't loved all of it, but a rare miss in the terms of his creative didn't land. It was really weird. And you definitely saw a little bit of the power play at hand at this. And this is where that Rock interview with Pat McAfee comes in too, because, it was then immediately afterwards, it was like, okay, why was The Rock not there? And it was all this, finger pointing. Well, he'd said, and like kind of back channel finger pointing and all this sort of stuff. And you could definitely tell there was a power, issue at this point where people just weren't, you know, it was, did The Rock overstep his ground, or maybe not overstep in the sense that he is actually, you know, a board member too. So The Rock can kind of say, hey, I'm coming out here and doing this thing. And then maybe Paul said, no, you're not going to do this. So I don't know. Who knows? But all that, the end result, like you said, was just that it was clunky. It was weird. And it just felt like John Cena's 17th world title win in the main event of the second night of WrestleMania 41 should have felt a little bit better. And at the end, it was just kind of like, huh, what's going on here? This is all really confusing and not very good. And Cody, I mean, all the build to Cody winning this title, and it felt very, you know, haphazard that he lost the title this way. And why is Travis Scott here? Just, you know what I mean? It was all just like, what is happening? It was like a fever dream at the end of a very long, very, and maybe that was me because I had a very long weekend, but it was done. And I was just like, what is, I don't know what is going on anymore with this. Yeah. It just, very strange, very, very strange.
I forgot Travis Scott came out during the match.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Just a complete
with that damn theme music. And it took so long to get to the ring too. Just taking his sweet old time to get down to the ring with that damn song playing over and over and over and over again. It's like, what is happening? What is this? You know?
Yes, that's right. Who knew that would lead to Jelly Roll getting involved later in the year? We'll talk about that in series. Yeah. Let's go to some of the other headlines of the month. The Rock and afterwards, John Cena isn't a bad guy, but a good guy telling the truth. Dave LaGreca of Busted Open had a rant on this on his show, and The Rock took to Twitter of all things to tell him to stop ranting and enjoy the show following criticism. So Rock was clearly gotten to about this whole thing. I know, very online.
I know.
For a guy, he comments a lot in Instagram stuff, and it's just very.
Imagine if you were The Rock, and why would you care about any of this? You're The Rock. You have everything you could ever want.
This is why I see some people that are in like power positions, and they're like engaging with Twitter trolls and things like that. Yeah. I'm like, aren't you a multi millionaire that can call it? Like, what are you doing? Like, why
your island?
I know.
In your pool on your island. What are you doing?
On their phone arguing like, people don't have profile. It's so strange.
Well, recently, like Gail Kim recently, like on a lesser level, but that stuff with Gail Kim a couple of months ago, it was just like, it was like her birthday too. And I'm like, you have like a very nice life. Just log off. Like, what are you doing?
Gail Kim, Sarah Stock, the Paradigm agent, Nick LaPiccolo, who hates Dave Meltzer, hates him. And it's just like at one point he had like 9 straight tweets about it. He's representing all these people and he's talking about successful. And I'm sure he is. Like, why are you spending your time doing this? Like, I do not get it. If you're in that type of position, like, rise above it. You know, you don't slum. Don't go hang out in the gutters.
Go with Eagles, brother.
All right, let's go with some other headlines. Karrion Kross talked about being left off WrestleMania, saying WWE ignored fans for a viral moment as that whole thing would begin. JD McDonagh returned at Raw after WrestleMania after a pretty serious injury suffered on Raw. Becky Lynch turned on Lyra Valkyria on that show. The tag team titles changed hands. On Raw, Stephanie Vaquer, current NXT Women's Champion, made her debut. On Raw, Sami Zayn made his return at the Jey Uso title celebration. Gunther attacked Michael Cole, remember this, and choked out Pat McAfee on Raw. That would lead to a match at Backlash. Paul Heyman teased adding new clients, and he certainly did, at aligning with Bron Breakker and Seth Rollins, of course, on Raw. The Bron Breakker alignment happened on Raw. We saw the Seth Rollins, of course, at WrestleMania. Coming out, some big shows, Survivor Series for Petco Park in San Diego. They announced that they were officially heading to Perth for Crown Jewel in October. John Cena's final match there confirmed. The company said they revealed the Money in the Bank date and location, September, New Orleans. Small little make good for them missing out on WrestleMania and all that. Poor New Orleans. Lex Luger revealed that he recently got married, and he explained why he missed the Hall of Fame segment at WrestleMania. He wasn't feeling well. Carmelo talked about a potential in-ring return, saying, I hope it'd be for WWE. This is coming after March when she did a kind of a tell-all interview, airing out all of her frustrations. And the month after, she's like, well, if I come back, I hope it's for WWE. I mean, I just do not get it. Mick Foley said he suffered a concussion in a car accident. The Smash Machine with The Rock set a theatrical release date for October, and the first trailer was released. The company entered into a new partnership with photos of Getty Images. Lynn McMahon filed motions to dismiss the Ring Boy lawsuit, which were unsuccessful. 3 new plaintiffs joining the lawsuit against WWE and the McMahons. That suit still goes on. We learned that WWE ID championships are going to be open to all indie wrestlers to compete for. John Cena versus Randy Orton set for Backlash after Orton RKO'd Cena at the Raw after WrestleMania. As I mentioned, Pat McAfee and Gunter also scheduled for that show, as well as a women's Intercontinental title match and a tease of Jey Uso versus Logan Paul. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, the thing that really got me this month was the Bron Breakker thing, getting him aligned with Paul Heyman and Seth Rollins. And this is something that I've been preaching about a lot on the flagship and for years is and this is true of AEW. This is true of New Japan Pro Wrestling. This is true of pretty much every wrestling company around the world is everyone is so careful about pushing young wrestlers and just giving people a push, you know, just a literal push. Like, here is a young wrestler that we think is going to be a star that we think very highly of. So let's just push him. And it feels like a lot of those just take forever and ever and ever. And every booker across the world is just so scared to push young wrestlers. So it's really nice to see WWE just say, hey, Bron Breakker, who we believe is a guy, we're going to align him here with Paul Heyman and Seth Rollins. And everybody could see it from a mile away that eventually Bron Breakker is going to turn on those guys, or at least he's going to turn on Seth Rollins or whatever and become the leader of this stable or whatever. And that's fine. And that's exactly what they did. Of course, it didn't happen exactly how they planned because of the Seth Rollins injury later. But I was just happy to see them finally just give Bron Breakker a push, because here's a guy who's been on NXT television for, you know, 3 years at this point and been on main roster WWE television for a couple years at this point. And it's just, it feels like it takes forever for people to push young wrestlers. And by the time they do get pushed, a lot of times they are a little older. They're in their 30s. They're in their late 30s, their mid 30s or whatever. And it's just, it's one of these things that I just wish more wrestling would be open to. And if you watch past eras of wrestling, you see it happen so much more. Is just push a guy. If you have an idea that this person's going to be a star, that you think highly of this person, just push them. I know Brian Alvarez on your very website has been screaming about Javon Evans and Obafemi for years. It's just like, those guys are great. Like they, and they're like, well, the future is no, the future is those guys right now. The future is now. Just push them. There's no, you don't have to wait years to push Javon Evans and Obafemi. Like put them on NXT, find out if they have the goods. They both have the goods. We all know they have the goods. Push them. Just put them on the main roster and push them and give them titles and give them big wins and have them be featured acts. Cause just all of wrestling is just like the top end of all the main events across the world. It's just old. It's just a lot of old, old guys. And it's not me being ageist or anything like that. It's just, you know, wrestling, you know, the lifeblood of wrestling is a lot of times is new, young, under, you know, represented talent. And that's just something that everyone across the board has just kind of lost sight of and just get so scared about pushing young talent. But yeah, it's good. So that's why I really like this moment where it was like Bron is being identified as somebody that we understand is going to be a top guy. And now it's, you know, taken the whole year. He's still kind of in the same spot he was at this point. But, you know, I want to see more of that in wrestling. And I was very encouraged by him just immediately aligning himself with this top group in WWE.
Yeah, this year especially has been a bad one for young talent. And you look at, and I it's funny you mentioned it, because I've had a note to write a column on this for quite some time, is this old guys rule type thing. And the fact that between the part-timers and the part-timers and just the way that, you know, it's just like pro sports, so many athletes or wrestlers are able to have their careers extended. And because of that, and because they were names in their late 20s and 30s, they're able to kind of carry that through. And like, you know, I can still draw, I can still do stuff. But the problem is that no one's willing to kind of, they don't really go anywhere. And so they're kind of stuck at the top of the card. And it really affects the group below. And it takes a long time, to your point, to get those opportunities. And you look across the board, it's a lot of guys mid-30s and early 40s. And there's the part-time thing kind of hurts as well. And I think it's only going to get worse to an extent where if, you know, Seth Rollins may be like, at some point be like, all these injuries. Yeah. I'd like to go part-time. I'd like to do the Roman Reigns thing. You know, Roman Reigns thing. Wrestle.
Yeah. Why not? It's great.
Five, six times. Make a shit ton of money. And I only have to wrestle six times. It may make, you know, I don't know, 15 total appearances. Like,
yeah. And every time I come back, you put me in a main event spot or I go for a title. Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, we'll do that.
But there's not that, and AEW has the same thing. We'll talk about AEW in just a minute. There's not this kind of just the tier thing of like, okay, the idea is the older guys, once they're kind of near the end, they help the younger guys get up and elevate, because that's the group it's going to have to carry forward. It's supposed to be a cycle. But I think the fact that so many guys are around and the part-time thing and all that, I think it's really grinding that cycle down, and it really affects it. And the young guys have a really hard time getting through or breaking through because they don't get the opportunities. And if they do, some people, you know, the defenders be like, well, they're on TV. It's not good enough just to be on TV. It's part of like, you have to sell people on This is why these people matter to the average fan, not the totally internet addicted fans like us that kind of know all stuff that's going on, right?
Well, the best example I can bring is the WrestleMania 42. The buildup there was the feat. Remember the feats, and it was like, oh, who's this going to be? And then it was just obviously the promo package for WrestleMania 42. Who's sitting at that table? Mm. It's CM Punk, Brock Lesnar, Cody, Roman, Paul Heyman, Paul Levesque.
Yeah,
you got to get Bron Breakker. You know what I mean? Like, you got to get who's. Look at the average age of those guys, and look at how long those guys have been on. Some of those guys have to get out of the way if we're ever going to get. But to your point. Now that we're allowing people to just be part-timers and just like Roman Reigns, I show up whenever I want and I'm a big star and you clear the runway for me whenever I show up. And again, like I said, more and more guys are going to look at that. Brock Lesnar, same deal. It's like, he's not going to work every single day or whatever. So it's a good thing that people are staying healthy longer. It's a good thing that people aren't, their bodies aren't breaking down. They're not dying. Like, you know, we all lived through a generation where our favorite wrestlers were dying in their 40s or whatever. That sucked. I don't really want that to go back again. I mean, I would much prefer people be very healthy in their 40s and 50s. But the problem is that, yeah, you're not recycling those talents. And it just feels like all of wrestling is caught in this like hamster wheel where the same people are being pushed. And it's been years and years and years and years, and there's this whole underbelly of these undercard guys or midcard guys that it's like there's guys that we all sort of identify that they are the future, but we say that they're the future forever. I mean, Bron Breakker, we've been saying he's the future for 5 years now, and it's like at some point the present. You know, like Ryan always says, sometimes the future has to be the present, and it's time to start getting these people and this next generation up and ready to go. And it feels like all bookers across the world, particularly in WWE and AEW, are very scared to push that next generation up.
Yeah, I did a segment on that on Wrestling Observer Live a couple of weeks ago about the table. And it was like 43, 46, 48, 62. It is, and I couldn't believe, because I'm like, it's all guys. And I'm a guy in my late 40s. I don't need to be on that table, right? There should be, you know, but it is just all older guy. And some, like, I don't see any of those guys. They can do the same picture next year, and all those people are going to be in a similar position.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a thing. All right, let's go back to my notes here. Let's go back to the rest of the month of WWE. Then we'll move on to AEW. Big E responded to comedian Tony Hinchcliffe's WWE joke on Raw, saying something was stiffer than Big E's neck, and he said they'd actually talked about beforehand because I think people were very much out for blood for Tony Hinchcliffe just being around. Gunter confirmed he signed a new contract and did not consider other options. I wish more wrestlers would test free agency just on both and any side, just to kind of see how it works, you know. And I wish we had more open free agency, but they just don't. And I think that's too bad. John Cena officially.
Not to interrupt you. One of the best things ever that Randy Orton did. I don't know if you remember back in 2019 or 2020 when he was never going to leave WWE. Of course, Randy Orton was going to, but he tweeted a picture of him pointing at like a Jaguars logo, and that was probably enough for WWE to say, "I'll just give him even more, whatever, just in case he doesn't go anywhere." But that's all you have to do, you know. Just a little bit of leverage goes a long way to get you some extra money and extra dough. Don't say I only want to work here, like, you know. Don't do it. And this is true. Hey, listen, if you're listening at whatever job you work at, don't do that either. You know, say, hey, you know, I'm weighing options. You know, you gotta get some leverage here. Don't say I only want to work here. No, you know, you're not going to get a great raise for that. So
yeah, and that's the thing is they don't have to leave. I understand that some people may, I really love it here, but if you keep your options open, it's not, if you're a top star, they're not going to say, well, we're not going to resign you then. You know, it's going to be they're going to want to compete and be like, okay, this, and that's the thing is. Companies should be confident enough to let their talent look at other options if they're like, I'm considering that. That's the whole thing of free agency. Yeah. That's what people make more money up and down the roster. And sometimes there may be guys can go and women can go back and forth, or, you know, that's the whole thing is these companies make so much money, especially WWE, their talents should be getting paid more. And that's how you do it, is to drive that up. Without a union, you can't do that. And that's the thing is if you play sides off each other and you say, look, you have to pay up to get me, make them work for it. That's, you know, that's how you make it too easy for me. You don't get all the cash you could.
And it's a benefit these guys have that wrestlers of past two decades didn't.
Right.
You know, I mean, TNA was never a true option in terms of big money. I mean, there was a couple guys that could use it as well, like Christian or whatever could use it, or Kurt Angle could use it as a landing spot or whatever when things went, you know, poorly in WWE. But these guys can actually quite literally use it as leverage for the first time in decades. That has not existed in wrestling in a very long time. Use it. It's very smart. Even if you have no plan whatsoever to sign that other contract, please just use it.
John Cena was announced for the WWE Clash in Paris PLE. Hockey Talk Man re-signed his Legends contract. WWE announced a multi-year extension of their partnership with Mattel. Cody Rhodes launching a new What Do You Want to Talk About podcast as part of their deal with Fanatics. Nick Khan said that WWE won't sign and bench people.
Oh.
That, by the way, you know, he told us. Also telling us, Triple H, on how WWE responds to online critics. The internet is not real life.
That's kind of right. I mean, I'm kind of with him on that one.
It is true. Sol Ruka won the WWE Speed Women's title. Stephanie McMahon hosting a new What's Your Story podcast. CM Punk, WWE is trying to get me to sign a 5-year deal. John Cena, I don't care who hears it. I love Vince McMahon.
Things you don't have to say. You don't have to say that. But okay.
Anyway. Rapper Cardi B hosting SummerSlam in 2025. Tommaso Ciampa shaved his beard after suffering a fall. Let's see. The WWE Unreal Netflix docuseries was set to debut in the summer. Triple H said China will for sure get a solo Hall of Fame induction. Bayley said that she had a year and a half left on her contract. There was an update on Travis Scott's potential in-ring debut. There's a lot of talk about him teaming with John Cena against Cody Rhodes and somebody else. I cannot remember who it was. But there, at this point, there was talk like, oh, yeah, he's going to get in here. And that certainly did not happen.
Yeah.
Fraxium joined the SmackDown brand, defeated Legado del Fantasma. Aleister Black, no big surprise, made his official return to WWE, appearing on SmackDown. So that was after his AEW run ended. Zelina Vega, speaking of Aleister Black, won the United States title on that show. WWE announced an injury to Bianca Belair, an injury kept her essentially, has kept her almost all year. Not a great year injury-wise for Bianca Belair over something. So it was a broken finger, but it had an issue with the knuckle.
Have you seen that finger lately? It is not healing very well at all. It is gross.
Yeah. John Cena and Seth Rollins were part of the celebrities announcing NFL draft picks. The mayor of London remains committed to hosting WrestleMania someday. Naomi said she was considering time off to start a family, saying, I really think this might be it. Well, it certainly was. And Carmella and Corey Graves announced they're expecting their second child. Thoughts about any of that?
I completely forgot that Travis Scott, they were teasing that he was going to actually wrestle. And yeah, I don't know. We're still waiting on that. Maybe he's still training. Maybe he's still at it, you know. In the Funkin' Dojo, working on, you know what I mean? Working day and night to make sure he's ready to go for his big debut. But and I do definitely remember that Ciampa having to shave his beard after a fall. I forget what happened, but he like hit his chin on something and he had to shave, and it was like, oh my god, he just looked like a totally different human being. It's, you know, it's so long ago. It's been so long since people saw him without the beard. So I just remember being just totally shocked by that. But and also Nick Khan, WWE won't sign and bench people. So all right, whatever you say, sir. I'm sure there's not numerous examples of people being benched, but sure, I'm sure you don't do that. So
yeah, I wish the thing I was thinking about the other day, you know, I was putting together this list. I wish Stephanie McMahon would try to talk to people outside of wrestling. And I think she's so entrenched in wrestling that she can't get out of it. And I think they really kind of want to make her something with the Steph's Places and this thing and the What's Your Story, but it's always wrestling people she talks to. I don't know. You're talking to the same people over and over again. I don't know. I was hoping she'd have at one point bigger aspirations to kind of get away from this. And I thought she did.
Yeah, it felt like there was a while where she did, and then she would talk, you know, she'd talk at these branding conferences and tech conferences and all this sort of stuff, and she did feel like somebody who maybe had a bigger mind than the wrestling business. Not necessarily like ways to use the wrestling, you know. She's obviously going to always, well, maybe always going to be in the wrestling business, although for a time it felt like she wasn't going to be in this wrestling business anymore, whatever happened there with her father. But it feels like, yeah, there was a time where it was, you know, hey, she's going to kind of get out of this thing and do some other stuff and maybe, you know, branch out a little bit and be somebody. Because, you know, the McMahons, it's like this is the family business or whatever. But both, you know, Shane kind of was the first to kind of break away and start to kind of do his own thing. And then it felt like Stephanie for a while there was going to break away and do her own thing. But yeah, that's a good point that you bring up, is that she's got all these different podcasts and all these different things, but it's like all she does is interview The Undertaker, you know, and it's just like, okay, well, I mean, we didn't really need that, you know, another, you know, podcast with a wrestler. So I don't know. That is kind of interesting. I hadn't thought of that, you know, how interesting it maybe would it be if she would maybe branch out a little bit and talk to some other people, but clearly doesn't feel comfortable doing that. So
yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. I think, I think we're stuck with her, so to speak, not in a bad way, but just, you know, you just kind of hope like some people, like they get out there, there's a window to get out and just try something. And they just kind of go what's comfortable. I guess, you know, you try to do things that scare you, but it seems like Vegas just doesn't want to do that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's flip to AEW / Ring of Honor Dynasty, second AEW pay-per-view of the year. Adam Cole, remember him, won the TNT title on this show. Anthony Bowens made his return, defeated Max Caster on the 0 Hour. Bandito kept his mask and defeated Chris Jericho to win the Ring of Honor world title. FTR attacked Adam Copeman following his defeat there in their effort to win the Trios titles. The Owen Hart tournament kicked off. The Young Bucks made their return after, I believe, about 6 months away, give or take, and helped Jon Moxley retain the world title after he defeated Swerve Strickland. It was second straight pay-per-view where fans afterward were kind of just really just like, ugh, this may... I think this is almost the apex of the we're getting really sick of the Moxley title era and the Death Rider shit and all this stuff. And then there was this kind of this online feud between Booker T and Swerve Strickland. Swerve Strickland addressed the live crowd after Dynasty saying F Booker T. The company announced a 4-hour Fighter Fest and also a 4-hour summer blockbuster show coming up for June, I believe. And they held Playoffpalooza episodes of Collision, part of the, you know, trying different things with the new WBD deal. Grand Slam Mexico was announced for Arena Mexico in conjunction, of course, with CMLL. There was AEW and ROH versus CMLL event also announced that week. Fantasticamania, of course, later that week. So a big week with AEW and the con companies and CMLL. AEW announced a Supercard of Honor and Death Before Dishonor are moving locations, and they also canceled a Collision date. They changed the All in Texas start time to 3 p.m., and they also announced that Death Before Dishonor was going to be taking place on the Friday before All In. And as part of some of those changes, they revealed the Owen Hart tournament brackets, of course. Jay White injured early and out of the tournament due to a broken hand. He still has not returned yet. Apparently he's ready, but you know, I don't know if he's ever going to come back. They revealed the location for Forbidden Door, which would be London. And of course, they had brought Dynamite and Collision overseas as well. The company announced they're producing two Dean Rasmussen tribute shows. This was at in Phoenix, I believe. They were set to do this Double or Nothing. That's right, in the parking lot. Ric Flair has revealed he was still under AEW contract. However, he would absolutely be at WrestleMania if he could. Orange Cassidy, out of action due to injury. Juice Robinson reportedly set to return soon. Mark Davis got hurt. Peter Avalon, still in the roster, got hurt. He's recovering from shoulder surgery. And then Pac suffered an injury on Dynamite. And Jon Moxley took his place as part of the AEW Trios Champions following that injury. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, so you mentioned it there with the nadir of like the Death Riders thing, and it definitely was around this point where everyone was just like, okay, we're done with this thing. And it's so funny because I think it turned around. It did get a little bit better as the year went on. I thought it actually ended up being a pretty good story when it was all said and done. And now Moxley's, you know, one of my favorite parts of AEW again. But this was a period where I think everybody was just like, all right, this is not going well. We're kind of done here. Moxley, I remember people were saying like, is Moxley washed? Should they let him go back to WWE or whatever? It got kind of wild there for a little while, and I think it played out okay, you know, when it was all said and done, and the build to All In Texas did end up getting there. But yeah, this really felt like the okay, we're really getting, especially with the Young Bucks returning and helping him retain the title. It really felt like, oh man, we're kind of off the rails here with this Death Riders thing. But all in all, I think it ended up working out pretty well for the next couple of months. But it was an interesting time for AEW because, like you said, a lot of stuff was moving, a lot of stuff was shaking. Like, you know, shows were getting canceled, shows were getting moved, they were just trying a lot of different things. You know, the popularity, you know, there was clearly dips in business, both, you know, at the live gate and ratings wise. So this was an attempt to see how we can kind of work things out, you know, move things around, especially with the NBA playoffs coming. And that was an issue. I mean, Nitro used to have those same issues as well with, you know, once NBA playoffs come, it was just like, all right, do we just, you know, take off Nitro? Do we just do it on Tuesday? Do we just, you know, take a week off or whatever? So they kind of had to figure out ways to sort of work around the NBA playoffs. And I think they all were pretty interesting ways to do it. The Playoffpalooza was an interesting way and doing, you know, different things here and there. And then, you know, otherwise the All In Texas, the early start time. And I thought that was a really interesting move for them to do that. And they've dabbled in that a little bit. And I don't know your thoughts on this, but I love the early, yeah, pay-per-view times.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I'm a big fan of it. Like, as somebody, you know, I'm sure you have a child. Now that I have a child, I'm sure I'm like even more going to enjoy the idea of, you know, pay-per-view being over. But it's always fun because we do these like reaction shows. You know, Joe and I will do a reaction show on flagshippatreon.com immediately following every single one of these shows. And it's like, you know, sometimes these shows end and it's like, my God, we're doing this reaction show until like 2 a.m. And I'm like, oh my God. And after these early shows, like, it's, you know, we're done about like 7 and 8. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. Like I have, you know, I could do something else after the show. Like I still have a life. And to me, honestly, I don't mind these afternoon pay-per-views. So I they've tested them out and they've been very successful. I mean, buys wise, they've been very, you know, they haven't dropped in buys and in some cases have increased in buys. So I kind of hope this is a thing that we get a little bit more, you know, especially if AEW is going to do longer pay-per-views, which they kind of have. They've you know, done 4-hour pay-per-views pretty regularly, 4-hour plus pay-per-views pretty regularly. So I'm pro afternoon pay-per-views. I don't know where you stand.
100%. As being on the East Coast. Yeah. It is really tough, especially, you know, you're doing like news recaps for the website and you just feel like you're trying to enjoy this, but it's also, you know, look at your watch. It's like, you know, 11:15 and it's just, you're just waiting. It's like, it's a main event. It's the thing you hope to, you're the most excited for or kind of a part of it. And just when you're just like, okay, can this thing end? Like that shouldn't be how you're, I think it shouldn't be how you're thinking about it. And also it, you know, it can hurt, you know, the talent and the reaction of the show as well. I know, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, why they complain about long pay-per-views. It's just there's a case, and we've reached past the saturation point where there's so much wrestling, right? And it's just there's shorter, impactful shows that leave people wanting more, and there's never a time when I leave an AEW pay-per-view thinking, oh, I want more of it. You know, it's just, it's like, okay, let's take a breath. I can go to bed. I can do this or whatever. And yeah, those afternoon shows, at least if the shows are going to be that long, having them in the afternoon, it's also good for, you know, our European friends, and they're able to watch shows earlier, and it just makes it more more accessible. And yeah, you're right, you can do stuff before and do stuff afterward and not feel like I'm exhausted at the end of it.
Yeah, it just it, the European thing is a great thing that I forgot about as well, is that those people don't have to stay up to ungodly amounts ungodly parts of the night to stay up and watch. But you know, these shows that were going on so long that like the European fans are waking up as we're all like, oh god, it's still going on or whatever. And you pointed out there's always that thing that happens in an AEW pay-per-view, and most AEW pay-per-views are really good, for the record. I like most AEW pay-per-views. I feel like I get my money's worth almost every single time. But like you said, there's always that, okay, how many more matches are there to go? You look at your watch, you look at the clock, you go, oh god, all right, it's 10:45. How many more matches do we have left in the show? And then you shouldn't ever do that. It should never feel like how much more is left in the show. It should feel like, okay, great, this ended and I feel fulfilled and good. And but you know, and I'm excited to watch Dynamite on Wednesday or whatever.
Yeah, right.
You're just like, oh god, it's over. Thank you. I can finally, you know, so it's you know, I'm never going to complain about watching wrestling. Like I think it's still pretty cool that, you know, I get to watch wrestling, and for the most part it's kind of part of my job or whatever. But there becomes a saturation point too where, like you said, you're just like, okay, there's a lot of wrestling that I have to watch. And it you know, it for fans, I think about it for fans too, it's just it's a lot. It's a huge time investment. And the afternoon pay-per-views make it a little bit easier to swallow, and they've been successful, so I think it's a win-win.
Let's go to the rest of the headlines for AEW. Chris Jericho taking time off of AEW TV has not returned, and I don't expect him to return. I after he wasn't all in, I'm like, he's not coming back. And I still think he's coming back. And he said WWE, and it makes a lot of sense. Again, one of the old guys coming back, small, short-term deal, you know, limited in-ring appearances, but still a presence. And there you go. So I think it's probably going to happen in January at the Rumble, as most people expect. The Nemeth AEW lawsuit moving to private arbitration. Mariah May believed to be heading to WWE. Spoiler alert, she did. Josh Alexander signed with AEW, debuted at Spring Breakthrough in Boston. Of course, this is when AEW passed Nitro for, if I remember the exact phrase, the longest running pro wrestling show in primetime on the Turner networks. I believe I got that right. And
I think that's
on a weekday or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, they got there. It's like, you know, WWE used to do that in the mid-2000s. They'd be like, we're the longest one. What was it? The longest running weekly episodic. Yeah. And it was like, even then, I think like Gunsmoke beat you guys, but okay, sure. That's fine. Exactly. It was like, but there was such a weird qualifier where you're like, I probably, cause I don't know if there's any other shows that fit this criteria that you've laid out. And yeah, like you said, the Dynamite one was very similar too. It was like the longest running Turner network non-weekend weekday episodic show. You're like, sure, probably. Yeah, I guess you probably are. So
yep. The company crowned new trios champions at that show, the Ops defeating the Death Riders. I was there. It happened to be in Boston. Trent Barretta returned on Collision from an injury. Rock Romero joining the Don Callis family as part of that return. We talked about Sarah Stock earlier. There's a report she was no longer with AEW, also confirmed. And boy, she would have quite a month or quite a year later on. Roosh made his return after a 2-month absence. Master P Speaking of WCW, yeah. Appearing on AEW Dynamite, FTR aligned with Stokely Hathaway after their turn and attacked the Rock and Roll Express on Dynamite. Billy Starks got pulled from a CMLL show. Kevin Knight confirmed he had a dual contract with both AEW and New Japan. Nick Wayne won the Ring of Honor TV title. The Kingdom and the Righteous made their returns to Ring of Honor TV very briefly, and they would both be gone later. Actually, the Kingdom just returned. I have no idea what their deal is. They're barely on any show. Very strange. Guantanamo Bay. Tony Khan announced the creation of the Ring of Honor. Speaking of strange, the Ring of Honor Women's Pure title. This was in April. This was announced. The tournament participants revealed they had a first match, Aminata versus Serena Deeb. We are, I think, in December at Final Battle. I think that's where we're finally getting the finals.
Finally going to be done. Yes. Here's the thing. We don't even have one of the semifinalists at this point.
We have one semifinal.
Is Queen Aminata and Deonna Purrazzo. That'll happen TBA on Ring of Honor television. Yeah. Billy Starks is also in the semifinals. We don't know yet if Serena Deeb or Yuka Sakazaki is going to make it to the semifinals. And presumably, December 5th, 2025, we'll have the final. Finally, of the ROH Women's Pure Championship announced in April, and now here, and we're recording this, you know, on the 18th of November, and we only have three of the four semifinalists, and we have no idea who's going to be the final champion. So,
it's something, man. It is something. And then finally, Persephone of CMLL was set to make her Ring of Honor debut announced for May. Any other thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on the Chris Jericho thing. It's been interesting that he has not shown up yet again. And every time that Tony's been asked about it, he's like, I would love to have Chris Jericho on television or whatever. So I don't. It's been weird. But now it's been so long that it's like, yeah, even if you bring him back, like, how do you do it? It's just going to kind of feel clunky. And honestly, I think it's time. Like, I think Chris Jericho was super, super, super important to AEW, you know, having credibility from day one, and, you know, a guy that you could sign and put on your TV and is a recognizable face, and a guy who's going to work his ass off, which he absolutely did in the early part of AEW. But we talked about it in the previous segment. It's time to move on and cycle people through. And then it's time. It's time for Chris Jericho to, whatever the next step of Chris Jericho's career is going to be, AEW can, I think, pretty safely move on from Chris Jericho. And if he goes to WWE, fine. If he goes wherever, it's fine. Like, this is a great example of a guy who has done his time, has helped you out, but is probably better off taking a step back and his spot being replaced from, you know, with somebody younger and someone new and someone different, someone who's underexposed on pro wrestling television as opposed to somebody who's been exposed on pro wrestling television for three decades at this point, basically. Yeah. So, you know, again, not taking anything away from how important he was for the early days of AEW, but you can pretty safely say, hey, thank you for all you've done, but it's probably best that you move on and you know, try something else. And Mariah May is a great example of what you said you wanted more in wrestling, where people move, people switch, people change. And I'm a big proponent of that as well. Like, people get really upset when talent leaves a company and goes to another company, and, oh my God, what does it mean? And it's got to be this globalized thing about, you know, what a disaster. This guy's not here anymore. No, I think it's great. I think it's great that a talent can say, you know what? I want to try something else. I want to go to the other company. And, you know, if you're AEW, I think you tell Mariah May, hey, we told a really, really good story with you, and it culminated in a great blow-off match. And, you know, the end result was Timeless Toni Storm got more over because of the story that you did with her. And good. That's, you know, that's fine with us. So shake her hand and say, you know what? Hopefully we can make, you know, we can do business together later. You know, you don't close that door. You don't say, all right, you know, screw you. I never want to work with you ever again. If you're a smart company, you say, okay, you did your story. We had our couple year run with you. Everything went well, you know, shake your hand and say, you know, hey, wish you the best, and hopefully we can do business again later. And I think that's a smart way to approach talent in pro wrestling. And I think talent in pro wrestling is smart to try different things and try unique things and try to move and bounce back. And I don't think it's impossible that Mariah May comes back to AEW at some point. I mean, might happen. Who knows? But This is the kind of stuff we should see more in today's wrestling, is people moving back and forth between the two companies and getting a new coat of paint when they do so as well.
Agreed. Let's run through TNA. Not a ton here. Against All Odds, and the location was revealed for Arizona in June at the aptly named Mullet Arena. Steve Macklin became the first international champion for TNA at Unbreakable, a show that happened, I think it was Thursday of WrestleMania week. Did not need to happen. You know, again, more and more and more and more shows. And I don't know how many people actually saw this. The former Alicia Fox and also Sydney Akeem made their company debuts at Unbreakable. Alan Angels no longer with the company. And they held Rebellion, which featured Indy Hartwell signing with the company, Nick and Ryan Nemeth winning the tag team title, Sean Waltman appearing, and Trick Williams attacking Joe Hendry. Lots of WWE influence there, former and current. A big surprise. Joe Hendry also disagreed that his WrestleMania loss was a squash, He also teased this WWE megastar appearing at Rebellion, and that certainly did not happen. So he does this every once in a while. He'll tease something like something really big is going to happen at a TNA show, and it just doesn't happen.
And it doesn't.
He never gets called out for it. Just kind of like, oh, whatever. But it's it is what it is. Anything there?
It just shows how the news cycle goes. You know, a guy can say something and everybody reports it and goes nuts about it, and then nobody ever follows up on it. You know what I mean? There's never a follow up of, hey, this guy said something was going to happen and then it didn't. It's just like we move on to the next story of the day, and it's like, and it'll happen again and again and again and again. And people tease things and tease things and tease things, and it's great because you don't ever actually have to, you know. I guess your fans sometimes, there might be some fans that care, but yeah, in the news cycle, it doesn't matter. You know, it's never said the next time that they tease something, hey, the last time this guy teased something, it didn't actually happen. It's just like, no, who cares? He teased it. Now he's teasing it again. So as far as the WrestleMania loss not being a squash, I mean, I'm glad Joe Hendry doesn't think it was a squash, but that thing was a big brother moment of I've ever seen. I mean, that was Randy Orton just absolutely big brother than that guy in the biggest way. But Hendry got his plaque that said WrestleMania participant or whatever. So good for him. So, did it say WrestleMania part? It said something like something demeaning. I forget what it was.
Was it WrestleMania? Was it WrestleMania rookie? I mean, as far as like the patches, they were selling the patches. They were doing that for WrestleMania debuts, or WrestleMania rookies, or something like that. So that could have been it.
I gotta see what this plaque. One second. Let me. I gotta
absolutely
make sure I see what it said, because I remember it being like, well, that's kind of a. Oh God, what did it say here?
But I'm sure he was happy with it. That's the thing, is he was, they're not gonna say otherwise, right? Yeah.
No, never. All right, here it is. Special guest. WrestleMania special guest Joe Hendry. So congratulations, special guest Joe Hendry.
That's great. Let's go to NXT / AAA, changing up the category, adding fusing these two groups together.
Yeah, God, could you imagine if you told me last year when we did our whatever segment, I'm going to combine NXT and AAA together. Do you mind? And I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense, but sure. Now it makes perfect sense. What the hell happened?
Exactly. So for next year, I'm going to put the New Japan category together and Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
just for the hell of it. Just for the hell of it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Joe Hendry made his return to NXT, confronted both Obafemi and Trick Williams. Steffi Vakur relinquished the women's North American title. Ricky Saints won the men's North American title. Dark State made their in-ring debut. Trick Williams set to appear in a CW show called All American. Noam Dar made his return after injury, won the Heritage Cup, and then an amicable breakup with Metaphor. They held Stand to Deliver, of course, during WrestleMania weekend. Hank and Tank being Fraxium for the tag team title. Sol Ruka winning that vacant women's North American title in a ladder match, and she would become a double champion because, again, she won the speed title as well. So clearly big things on the horizon on the main roster for Sol Ruka. And AAA announced their Triple Mania Regia show for June, which, of course, would be essentially under WWE direction, as all their stuff would be from here on out. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing would obviously be the AAA, you know, and we kind of glossed over it a little bit earlier, but this, I thought it'd be a good time to bring it up now. I mean, that's a massive move for WWE to purchase AAA and try to, I mean, now AAA had been doing pretty poorly for a while. I mean, like, business-wise, they were doing okay, but like in terms of the actual shows were pretty terrible. Most major AAA shows were pretty terrible, but WWE just straight up buying AAA is a massive, massive story. And you know, we're seeing it play out now this year, and I thought it was going to be a little bit of a bigger deal than it has been. It's been an okay deal, but I kind of thought they would do more with it, and it doesn't seem like they've done a ton. But it's an interesting move in terms of them getting in that marketplace, buying an established company in that marketplace. It's also a move where you're kind of trying to stomp out CMLL, you're trying to stomp out AEW and their relationship with CMLL, and you talked about it with AEW running, you know, the Grand Slam Mexico and running in Arena Mexico, and CMLL doing quite well. And it's just, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on there, and it's an interesting business move for WWE to purchase AAA, and we probably won't know the exact extent of it. You know, we'll maybe be able to look back a year later, you know, next April, and see how things looked. But it's been interesting how, you know, and I don't know how many of the AAA shows you've watched since, but it's kind of interesting how quickly those shows have just kind of become WWE shows that happen in Mexico. I mean, a lot of the talent is WWE talent, you know, and you look up and down the card and you're like, this is just the WWE. This is an NXT show essentially. And, you know, there's a couple of, you know, talent that have stayed around in AAA, but they've very quickly filtered out a lot of the, you know, and they still run their house shows. And on those house shows, you'll see a lot of the true AAA talent, but on like the major shows that they show on YouTube, it's a lot of, you know, a lot of your Lolo Vices, a lot of your Dom Mysterios, a lot of your, you know, and then sprinkle in some Mr. Iguana in there, you know, and whatnot. But it's
a lot of Finn Balor. Kind of
yep. A lot of Finn Balor. Yeah, puppets, a lot of JD McDonagh, a lot of, you know, those kind of guys. So it's been fascinating to see how it's kind of turned so quickly with this relationship. But yeah.
Let's talk about Japan. Tetsuya Naito and New Japan mutually agreeing not to renew his contract. I think I don't know if a lot of people saw this coming, but they certainly, Naito's in-ring work had suffered and really kind of slowed down, heard more. You know, I said every episode, I'm not a huge Japanese wrestling watcher, however, you hear recaps and stuff, and a lot of complaints about Naito and just his ability to move in the ring and all that. So he and the company mutually agreeing to part ways. Maiko Satomura's final Stardom match was revealed for All-Star Grand Queendom. WB Star sent video messages as a tribute. Mayu Iwatani announced her departure from Stardom. New Japan held several events. Sakura Genesis, Resurgence, Windy City Riot, and Heizen no Kunai. I cannot pronounce some of these. I do apologize. The company also revealed their Best of the Super Juniors 32 competitors, an event schedule for the G1 Climax, Wrestling Labs for Wrestling Dontaku, and other events as well. Resurgence for May started taking shape. A lot of AEW influence, the Young Bucks issuing a challenge to the Bullet Club War Dogs. Mercedes Moné said defend her strong women's title. There was a three-way match that would turn out to be booked later on. Speaking of Windy City Riot, Tomohiro Ishii won the strong open weight title, and Takeshita defeated Hiroshi Tanahashi in his final United States match at Windy City Riot. Jeff Cobb officially leaving New Japan and vacating the IWGP tag team titles on the way out. Didn't actually lose them on the way out, rather, but just decided to vacate them. And of course, he'd be heading to WWE. Rocky Romero was revealed as Takeshita's partner for a match at a Wrestling Dontaku. Former New Japan booker and WB Hall of Famer Hisashi Shinba passed away at the age of 90. And we also had new IWGP tag team champions, that being Callum Newman and the Great Okan, as they defeated Hiroki Goto and Yoshihashi at New Japan's Wrestling Red Zone. Thoughts about any of that?
So I'll start with the Naito news, because I mean, that was, he had slowed down a lot, and his body had really just kind of started to deteriorate in terms of his knees were pretty shot and stuff. But he could still go when he needed to in a big time match or whatever. But the announcement that he was, you know, leaving was stunned people. I mean, this is a guy who's been a New Japan lifer, had been there forever, and nobody really thought that he would ever leave. Like, a lot of people thought, you know, because he was a guy who had a lot of booking mentality and thoughts about booking shows or whatever. So a lot of people thought that, you know, maybe if anything, like once his in-ring wrapped up, that maybe Gato would step aside and Naito might have a chance to book or, you know, be involved in that. So for him to just say, hey, I'm out, and to be out and to still be out and, you know, has not come back. And now there's, you know, potential that he'll come back and do some stuff here and there with the company, but it's a stunner. I mean, this is one of their biggest stars leaving, and this is on a year where New Japan, you know, and you look at it in totality over the last couple of years, you lose Okada, you lose Tanahashi, now, you know, January 4th he's done, you lose Naito, Kenny Omega, Will Ospreay, you know, those guys, just the number of guys that have left New Japan Pro Wrestling in the last couple of years is monumental, and to the point and kind of the theme that we've had on this entire show, they have sort of rested on their laurels and not gotten the next generation over, because you had Naito and because you had Tanahashi and because you had Will Ospreay and because you had this guy. So they've kind of rested on their laurels and haven't gotten the next generation over yet. And now you're left at the end of this year, at the end of 2024, because of this news, with really a lot of these guys, you know, gone, and a lot of your tippy top stars gone. And Naito's still a massive, massive draw for New Japan Pro Wrestling. So it was a stunner. It was just an absolute, like, I remember reading that news and being like, well, that can't be real. That seems crazy. And, you know, a lot of people thought that maybe he was just going to take time away to get his body right and get his surgery and get healthy. But, we haven't seen that yet. And he hasn't really teased coming back yet. And he's done a little bit of stuff here and there, but has not really, you know, done a couple things in Germany and a few things in Japan or whatever, but hasn't really made his presence known in Japan this year. So it's just interesting. It's a very interesting story for Naito to be out there. And real quickly on the Windy City Riot, that was a show I actually attended live and had a blast. Mm. And I will tell people, if you've not watched that Takeshita Tanahashi match, don't finish out your year without watching that match. It's a great match. Takeshita is amazing in it, and Tanahashi's amazing in it. And just the idea, it tells a really good story, because a lot of people expected, oh, it's Tanahashi and it's his last time in America. And that was seizes that. And that was the sell for the show. Last time to watch, Hiroshi Tanahashi wrestle in America. And that got me to the show. I was like, well, I'm not going to miss that. And I thought we were going to get Tanahashi playing the hits. And they actually told the story where Takeshi just beats his ass. Like, Takeshi just destroys this guy. And he's conflicted. Like, the entire match, he's conflicted. Like, should I be beating this old man as much as I am? And Tanahashi's just like, nah, give it to me, man. You know, if you're the better man, just beat me. And it's the whole match is Takeshita just kind of feeling like, ah, I feel really bad. Should I just, you know, you're old and you're broken down and it's your final match. Should I let you have a little bit more? And Tanahashi, no, give it to me. And that's what it is. And Takeshita just kind of beats him and beats him and beats him and beats him and then finishes him off, which I thought was a really interesting story to tell. Cause again, like I said, in the building, I think we all thought, all right, we're going to get the sling blade. And, all right, we're going to get the high fly flow. And, you know, maybe he's going to beat Takeshita and do the, you know, do the guitar or whatever. No, he just got beaten and beaten and beaten. And then, you know, they did all the stuff after the match where he did the big, you know, send off and the wave and I love all of you and all that sort of stuff. But that was a really interesting way to book that match, is just to have Takeshita beat him. But, you know, I might not be selling it as a good match, but it is a really, really good match. It's great to watch. You know, again, the theme, again, a young wrestler just kind of doesn't step to the side of the old wrestler. He just beats him and proves that I'm the new generation, I'm the future, I'm the now. You know, you're the old, you're the present, you're done. It was cool. It was a really, really cool match, but that was a fun show. I'm really glad I went to it.
And we'll round things out with the junk drawer, all the best of the rest of things that didn't fit it above. Rob Van Dam and Raj Desi among the surprise debuts at MLW's Battle Riot 7. In that match, RVD suffering a double heel fracture.
Steve sounds like it hurts.
I know. I know.
I don't like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be hard to walk around, I would guess.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah.
So, Chicago, I mean, we can't, we have to have you on the show and talk about something Chicago related. Steve Mongo McMichael passing away.
Yeah.
At 67 years old, Ric Flair paid tribute, and we'll talk more about the, you know, the AEW tribute. I don't know if it happened in this month, it may have been in May. I'm not sure, but, yeah, and that was obviously a long battle with ALS, got in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and everyone seemed to really, yeah, really enjoy him and all that. But yeah, that was now he doesn't have to suffer anymore, and happened yeah, in April.
It felt unfortunately, like I hate to say this, but it kind of felt like he was maybe suffering. Everybody kind of, you know, that they just wanted him to be alive for that moment where he makes right. it to the Hall of Fame, and thankfully he did. And he passed not that long after. And it felt like a moment where everybody could kind of breathe easy and say, okay, he got that moment. He knows now. Now he can maybe pass a little more comfortably knowing. And you know, that mm-hmm. was a cool moment to see all the people surround all of his old teammates and surrounding him as he got the news. And, you know, it's clear he understood, you know, he can't move, obviously, and he can't talk or whatever. But the idea that he still sort of understood what that meant and understood that he was in the Hall of Fame and maybe to himself felt like, okay, now I can really pass and finally, you know, feel comfortable in my life. So yep. it was a cool moment, really, really cool moment for him to make the Hall.
Yep. Obviously WCW wrestler and WCW commentator, especially during the Monday Night War era. Maple Leaf Pro signed legends deals with the families of Bruiser Brody, Bulldog Brower, and Dave McKigney. Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff announced Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Talk more about that later on. Brody Lee Jr. made his in-ring debut at Joey Janela's Spring Break, and then there was a barbed wire stipulation added to Sabu's retirement match against Joey Janela that yeah. also took place during that weekend. So Sabu's in-ring career came to a fitting strange end, put it that way.
Of course, yes.
yes, yes. We had Bloodsport 13 taking on. We had Karrion Kross, Zack Sabre Jr. against Jonathan Gresham, Josh Barnett against Gabe Kidd, tons of, you know, NXT talents, Tavion Height, Shayna Baszler on the show as well. Story, Lou Nixon, who was an indie wrestler, got paid for pulled booking from the show. Tank Abbott, Don Fry, Dan Severn, Butterbean, and Mark Kerr were all set to be attendance as well. Gail Kim, we talked about her earlier, announced for a NWA Crockett Cup autograph signing after she was released by TNA in March. And Natalya was set to challenge for the women's title at the Crockett Cup event as well. Any other thoughts there?
Yeah, so we could talk briefly about real quick. I wanted to talk about Mania weekend because I was there and had a blast. It was a really, really fun weekend in Vegas, and I'm kind of planning on going back again this year. But I will say, if you are one of my favorite shows of the entire weekend, was one that kind of flew under the radar, but I would definitely recommend people check out. I had two of my favorite matches from the entire weekend, and that was it was a Dragon Gate USA Pro Wrestling Revolution, the Gate of Revolution show. It was at Meet Las Vegas, and that was a really cool venue. It had a lot of really, really good shows as well. You had your collective at the Palms Casino that entire weekend. That's where you obviously had Bloodsport and Spring Break and all the GCW shows and a bunch of the other you know, big time indie shows. But then Meet Las Vegas had like a kind of a secondary collective, and that's where a lot of West Coast Pro ran there, Deadlock ran there, Prestige Wrestling ran there, and this show, this DGUSA Pro Wrestling Revolution show, ran there. And there was two matches that I would really, if you want to go out of your way, they're on Triller, I believe, if you want to go watch them. But two matches that I think were two of my favorites of the entire weekend. There was one that was the Lucha Solos versus the Panther Brothers, which is an incredible match. It's like 11 minutes, and these guys just do a ton of crazy shit. So I definitely recommend it. That's my favorite match of the entire weekend. And then the main event of that show, which was a Dragon Gate showcase match, Benkei, Hyo, and KZ versus the Z-Brats of Ishin, Kota Minoru, and Shun Skywalker, was phenomenal. I actually gave it 5 stars. I gave both those matches 5 stars. So if you're watching, if you're listening to this and you're like, ah, you know, I knew about WrestleMania weekend, but maybe didn't watch a ton of the matches. I mean, that's the show to really go out of your way. It's a Gate of Revolution. Like I said, DGUSA Pro Wrestling Revolution. Really recommend checking that one out, because it was, yeah, my favorite show of the entire weekend as well. And I went to like 7 wrestling shows that weekend, packed it in as much as I possibly could. But yeah, as far as a Real American Freestyle Wrestling, I mean, it was, you know, Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff were teasing they were going to do something, like a big announcement or whatever. And I don't think anybody could have expected the big announcement to be a, you know, a freestyle wrestling company that's going to, you know, tour and run major shows or whatever. But yeah, it's happening still. Like, I know there's a show happening in Chicago like next weekend or this weekend. I don't know exactly. It's I guess it's still going. I have you really followed any of it or checked in on any of it? My vibe. Like, freestyle wrestling does nothing for me. So I'm more the pro variety, but I guess it's still going, and I guess people are going to it and watching it, but it just feels like a complete afterthought.
Yeah. I mean, they're on Fox Nation, which is their subscription service. So it makes it tough to get to. And yeah, I've only heard about it through Dave talking about, because he is big into amateur wrestling. I think it's as boring as watching paint dry. I just have never got into it. And yeah,
I appreciate it, but I don't want to watch it ever.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's physically, I mean, it's insane. And I know enough about just watching UFC for, you know, 15, 20 years or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it exists. It's a thing. I think it was a dart throw against the board, and some people talked him into it. And I don't know, we'll see. We'll see how things go. I think, you know, Hogan not being involved with it, granted, he was never really connected with amateur wrestling. I think his passing, I think, kind of takes away some of the potential star power and, you know, interviews and things like that. But I think everyone kind of thought it was a weird mix to begin with, given that there's no amateur background there for Hogan to, like, or even Bischoff to be aligned with. It's not like a life passion project or anything like that where they're really going to get behind, you know?
Yeah, it just kind of felt like they found like a, hey, no one is doing this, so we should do it. And it's like, there might be a reason no one's doing it, though. You know what I mean? Because it's not that exciting, and people don't want to watch. I mean, it's an ambitious attempt to try to get, because like college wrestling is obviously massive, and that's a huge deal. And the NCAA finals are massive, and high school wrestling is a pretty big deal in certain states. I know in Illinois, it's a huge state tournament. So I get it. I understand trying to sort of figure, hey, we got these stars in college and they're big time deals and people love watching them. How can we translate that then to the pros and find a way to make it work? But it's going to be tough. It's going to be hard, and it's going to be an uphill battle. And like you said, without it being, you know, it's not a company run by people who feel like they love freestyle wrestling and know freestyle wrestling. So I think that's always going to be tough. And just, yeah, it's a hard sport to translate to the pros. Like you said, it's if you understand it and you know it, and I know a lot of people in my life that are huge. I mean, they train in it. They train children in it. They've wrestled in it. Like, I get it. And for them, it's like, they love it. But I just, if you don't understand it and you're not in that life, it's really, when you watch it, you just don't really get it. Have you ever watched, like, I've gone to like high school wrestling events and I don't know what the hell's happening ever. I've really tried it. I've sat next to people that are like, all right, so this is evident, that's evident. It's like cricket. Like, I've watched a ton of cricket and I want to understand cricket, and I've had cricket explained to me. And there's been times where I've said, okay, I get it. I understand cricket. And then the next time I watch cricket, I'm like, I don't understand. I don't know what's going on. So maybe that's a me problem, but yeah, wrestling is kind of the same thing for me. The freestyle wrestling and amateur wrestling. It's just like, I watch it and I appreciate it. I understand. I really, really, really do appreciate the work that goes into it and the athletes. I mean, they're obviously incredible, incredible athletes. It's just, it's never translated to a TV or a live event, you know, product that I've really enjoyed. So,
well, before we let you go, we've come to the end of our talk all through the month of April. A lot of fun as always, and let's plug away. Where can people hear you, read you, feel you, and experience you on Voice of Wrestling, the flagship? The floor is yours.
Absolutely. Oh, sorry. VoicesOfWrestling.com. Of course, it's websites. I'm the managing editor there at VoicesOfWrestling.com. We don't do news. We do more like kind of columns, opinion articles and stuff. If you want news, you go to F4W online. You go to WrestlingObserver.com. You want, you know, big time column opinion stuff. We do that there at VoicesOfWrestling.com. Also, I am the co-host of the flagship podcast. We said every single week, it's streams live Thursday nights at flagshippatreon.com and is shows up on free podcast feeds usually Friday afternoon or so. And it's a show about 3 to 4 hours of pro wrestling talk. We try to cover stuff that no one else is covering. We still do the big stuff. We're still going to talk WWE. We're still going to talk AEW. We're also going to talk, you know, New Japan Pro Wrestling. We're going to talk about CMLL. We're going to talk about MLW. We cover MLW like all the time because it's very fun for us that nobody ever covers MLW. We cover the NWA sometimes too. We'll cover everything. Yeah. I mean, we don't watch it. We just kind of watch it from afar because it's very strange. I understand. I get your reaction. I do. But it's something that we've decided from day one of doing the show that we were going to cover the NWA, the news and all that sort of stuff of it. But it's never a dull moment in the NWA. I'll tell you that. A lot of stuff going on. But we cover all wrestling. We try to cover it all. Japanese wrestling. We cover 01. Like, we'll cover anything that is happening in pro wrestling. We're going to talk about it and discuss it at length on the flagship. So match reviews, show reviews, but also just, you know, big picture topics, thoughts about the wrestling business are all covered on the flagship. And then if you want bonus content from Joe and myself, the host of the flagship, we do that at flagshippatreon.com. And that has columns, exclusive audio. We do Thursday Dynamite reviews. Joe does a Thursday Dynamite review every single week covering Dynamite. I do retro shows. I do, you know, just different stuff. We cover a ton of wrestling there then at flagshippatreon.com. So there's columns, there's shows, and we've been doing stuff since 2019. So there's a huge archive of retro shows and different things. And of course, like I mentioned at the top, or during the segment, I should say, we do Instant Reaction Live, which is a live reaction show after AEW pay-per-views and after select WWE pay-per-views as well. If we're both home and we're not doing anything, we'll do WWE pay-per-views as well. But we do it for Wrestle Kingdom too, which is always fun to, you know, do a live show at 7 a.m. or whatever. But we do that on flagshippatreon.com too. So Instant Reaction Live, detailed, extensive post pay-per-view recap shows, like 2 to 3 hours covering the show, sometimes longer than the show itself, because that's what we do. We're total weirdos that we complain about how long a show is and then we go almost just as long recapping that show.
Yeah, I hear you.
We note the irony, don't worry. We are well aware of the irony of complaining about a show length and then spending 4 hours talking about said show. But hey, that's what we do, and we're nothing if not hypocrites. So flagshippatreon.com for all that bonus audio, flagship podcast on your podcast feeds, and then voicesofwrestling.com as well.
Yeah, and help him out. He's a new dad, everybody. Come on, kick a few bucks over there.
God, these diapers and these wipes, man. I thought we were good. I thought we bought so many ahead of time.
No,
forget it.
There's a reason when you look at registries where people always have diapers on there. Like, why? Yeah. And it's because they go very, very quick. Yeah,
yeah, they go quick. This thing, like, yeah, God, he's gone through 10 a day. It's like, what are you doing, man?
Please, I know. Find someone you know at a hospital and that can just sneak some out to you out the back, you know, slip them some money or things like that. They'll never notice the difference, right? They'll
notice that. Right. We need a crate. We need a pallet delivered to this hospital.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, yeah. So I was going to say, you're close to a good city, Chicago, for doing those type of things. I'm not going to say that, but everyone's thinking it. Good stuff. Well, Rich, best of luck with the young family, especially during the holidays, and best of luck for everything else, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again down the road. Rich Kraich, thanks so much for returning to Josh Nason's Punch Out and the year in review into April 2025. Thanks so much. All right, big thanks to Rich Kraich for stopping by. It's been a rich week, hashtag rich week, with a rich fan. Earlier this week, talking about the month of March, and then, of course, Rich Kraich talking about the month of April. And we'll have a couple of guests, returning guests, next week for episode, May and June, almost halfway through the series. We'll just kind of spread these out a little bit here over the next month and a half. But yeah, these are fun to do. Want to keep banging these out as much as we can, and give you plenty of time to catch up and list these. If I sound tired, I do apologize. I was apologize to Nick Khan, of course. Nick Khan doesn't like when people say they're tired. Went to AEW last night as I'm recording this. It is Thursday, the 20th of November. Went to AEW Dynamite / Collision in Boston last night. A little bit of a drive from where I am, but not too bad. Long show, but it was a fun show. It was, got there probably around 5:30 or so. And I usually like get something to eat. And I tell you what, as a New Englander, you just want to find a bar that you can get a beer and a burger at. And around the Aganis Arena, which is on the campus of Boston University, which is in the city, there is nothing to eat around. No good restaurants. I've been there a bunch of times. It is hard to find. They have a decent place in the Paradise Rock Club. I think there was a show going on there, so I didn't know if it was open. So I ended up at a pizzeria. of all places. And yeah, it was not really what I was looking for for a show and all that. But yeah, it was a fun show overall. Lots of the stars were out. I don't mind these combined 3-hour Dynamite collisions. And yeah, maybe something in the future. Who knows? Who knows? That 3 hours, get it kind of in, out, done, all the stars in one spot. I kind of like that quite a bit. And yeah, we get Full Gear coming up this week. And not super excited for the show as of yet. Typical, you know, it's going to be a good show. And going into it, you're like, okay, some stuff we've seen before, whatever, but wrestling will be good. That's kind of the way it always is. And yeah, I did, if you're looking for more non-year interview content, I did Wrestling Observer Live this past Sunday, filled in for Andrew Zarian. He asked if I could fill in. He's still recovering from, I think, pneumonia or something like that. So he's still ailing a bit. Do not know if I'm going to be on this week's show or not. But yeah, I got it's a case of, you can tell when you write a headline and the activity on social media, you can definitely tell what people listened to the show and what people did not, or people even opened up the link, which people did not. I said it was, I think the headline I used was, it's time to call TNA Wrestling out on their bullshit. And people are like, well, you got to call AEW out on their bullshit. And there was a lot of that type of stuff. And a lot of people saying it was a Dave Meltzer, because TNA is now the number two company, he's telling his staff to do hit pieces, which I can swear in the life of my daughter, never has happened, never would happen. It's not how it works here. And it was seeing some of the reaction, people didn't even listen to it. And especially from like TNA fans who I defended on the show, and they still were just like, it's this very AEW derangement syndrome. You know, it's really weird how, like, well, what about this? People, sometimes things just are what they are. But that's the way it is on social media, which is why it's a toxic wasteland. Speaking of, you can follow me on Twitter or Blue Sky at Josh Nason, JOSHNASON. And yeah, coming up next week, we'll go to May and likely June. Both shows are being recorded next week. I don't know if I'm going to release them both next week, being the holiday week and Thanksgiving, but you never know. And until next time. Before that, you have a lot of choice in your podcast day. Greatly appreciate the time you spend with me on this very podcast. I hope it's worth the time. And please tell others about this series. There's nothing else like it. If you're into wrestling and wrestling history, especially recent stuff, I think this is good. I'm going to have some coffee, wake up a little bit, and hope you do the same. Until next time, friends, insert catchphrase here.